Hello, my name is Simon Ward, and I would like to welcome you to the Triathlon Coach podcast. If you don't already know me, I'm the founder of thetriathloncoach.com and the SWAT Inner Circle, and I've been a triathlon coach for over 20 years, working with absolute beginners right up to Olympic champions and covering all distances from sprint to Ironman. Now it's my goal in this weekly 30-minute podcast to share practical, usable advice from the best athletes, coaches and experts from the world of triathlon so that you can get the most from your training time and maximise your enjoyment of the triathlon lifestyle. So as I've already said, we've got just 30 minutes, so let's get rolling with today's guest. Well, welcome back, listeners. I am so honoured to have this guy on the show today. He's called over 2 million athletes to the finish line. He's announced over 1,000 races, almost 400 of them Ironman races. He's in the Ironman Hall of Fame. He started announcing Ironman events in 1989, which, if you can remember, was also the year of the Iron War between Dave Scott and Mark Allen. His name is Mr. Mike Riley. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Simon, thanks for having me. But there is one correction in the intro. My next Ironman will be my 179th Ironman.
Oh,
so
I'm
not
sorry.
400 Ironman. That's all right. I've been around a while, but I haven't been around that long.
I'm awfully sorry, Mike. So 100. Wow, that's still some. That's still some number there, Mike. 179, not out, and that's pretty good. So that was one of my first questions, really. We said there that you got started in 1989, but what commentary were you doing before then, and how did you get that gig?
Oh, gosh, I started announcing running races in the San Diego area in the late 70s. And actually in 81, I announced and was the co-race director of the first ever professional triathlon here in San Diego, first pro triathlon anywhere. And so I was always doing it in the late 70s and all through the 80s throughout Southern California. And you know, I'd go to Chicago and do the Chicago Marathon, I'd announce that, and, you know, other events. So long before 89, I had a lot of time on the microphone, but Kona was the, that was the grand baby of them all. That was the pinnacle of the sport. So it was amazing to get there in 89.
Wow. And I mean, I know that, you know, Mark Allen had been pushing for some while and had some near misses there, and Dave was sort of coming to the end of his reign. Did anybody foresee that race and that year was going to be so monumental?
Well, we always knew that, you know, Mark always came there in shape and Dave always came there as Dave. He was the man. Mark had failed 7 times before that, whether it was mechanical or, you know, faltering on the run and Dave beating him up. And Mark would go out and win so many other races. He'd win everything there was in Southern California. He'd go all over the USDS series. He'd win, you know, then he'd get the Kona and Dave just had his number. So we always knew, hopefully, that Mark would do well. You just don't want to see a guy just keep getting beat up and fail. But to the extent of, you know, stroke for stroke, stride for, you know, stride on the run all the way, we didn't see that coming. I mean, you just didn't. And what tells the tale is we've really only seen one or two races like that in the history of the sport where two guys or even two gals matched each other almost all day long till that finish.
Mm. Did last year's finish come close to that, do you think, then?
No, nothing. I mean, I had a Peter Reed, Chris Lee finish in Australia that was a sprint. You know, Peter Reed broke him about, I don't know, 80 meters from the finish line, and Chris Lee just, you know, he lost, and that was close. I wasn't at the Ken Glaw, I think it was Ray Browning race in Brazil where they came through neck and neck, or New Zealand where they came through neck and neck. So, yeah, I mean, it's hard to duplicate that just because those guys were together all day long. But, yeah, you know, every Ironman win on the pro side for me is an absolute thrill, and that one always is the best at the moment, that's for sure.
I don't suppose you ever thought that having watched that one, things would never get any better than that. Did you think about hanging your microphone upon that day?
Yeah, for the next 2 or 3 years, I go, hey, what's this guy winning by 6 minutes for? That's not supposed to happen. Come on, let's go. Let's have another race. And yeah, it just never materialized.
So, I mean, and you talk about, you know, every pro performance is memorable, but do you get the most pleasure from calling the pros across, from calling Peter Reed across, or you know, Frodeno or Chrissy Wellington, or do you get pleasure from the age groupers or the people who are coming across with, you know, in that last hour where we get all the crowds and the pros and everybody else at the finish line?
The pros are my first pleasures of the day, and that's how my day works out. I love bringing in world champions and calling them a world champion. They're the pinnacle of our sport. They're the leaders of our sport. They're the ones that make and produce a living from our great sport and from Ironman. And then the day just keeps getting better and better. And I'm not saying there's one finish that's better than the next, but when you know a lot of the backstories of the age groupers coming in, whether they've been battling some type of disease or they lost a loved one or they, you know, lost a limb and they're coming on in, or they're just someone trying to juggle, you know, 40 and 50 hour work weeks yet train for an Ironman and juggle their family life. Those are so inspirational to me, and I know they're inspirational to others. So when I call them an Ironman, I know I'm calling the entire family that's there with them, all their friends that have been helping them train, the moms and dads that are seeing that daughter finish their first Ironman. I mean, the backstories are amazing. And so when I know I call someone like that an Ironman, it's for that person finishing, but there's that extended family that just hears it as much as that athlete does.
Wow. That's awesome. It is. And that was one of my other questions, actually, was, you know, because I do some commentating on similar distance races over here in the UK. And, you know, when you're up sort of 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning, watching everybody getting ready in transition, and then the race goes off, we start ours at 6 and we finish at 11, and you're out there all day. I mean, just how do you keep your energy levels up, Mike? Because you said you get energy from the pros and then it just gets better and better, but you must have to take a break. It's an awful long time to be out there, particularly in Kona, where it's, the weather conditions aren't conducive to being out there that amount of time, are they? It's strength sapping.
Yeah, I've never been a break. People say, Mike, you must have been on break. The reason I'm running out of that tower is to go to the bathroom. or if somebody says, hey, I got a sandwich down here for you, I grab it and I bring it back up to the tower or the stage. So I don't like, I mean, people really want to hear what I say to them. A lot of them want to hear my voice. I mean, the things that they tell me, it's kind of daunting and humbling all at the same time. So I want to be there for them. You know, you think about it, that one of the best things we can do in life is to be able to make someone else's life happy or happier. And I know by what's done at the finish line, that's going to naturally happen. They've been putting in some incredible time and training and sacrifice to get to that moment after, you know, the 140.6 miles. And to not be recognized is an absolute fear. I couldn't imagine someone not being recognized at that finish line. So my energy level is high all day long. I don't have time to get tired. I don't want to get tired. I will myself not to get, sure, there's, you know, I'm a little beat up and you're going, oh my God. I don't look at it like, oh gosh, it's 9 o'clock and I've got 3 more hours to go till midnight. I look at it like it's 9 o'clock and we've only got 3 hours and we've got a lot of great finishers left. Let's keep it up for them. You know, when the day gets longer or what people quote unquote think should be a tougher part of the day, for me, it's a more regenerating part of the day, especially right to that what I call final winner that comes across the finish line. I really don't want it to end, Simon, and it has to, doggone it, but I don't want it to end.
Well, you know, Mike, I if you can remember, I raced in Kona last year on my legacy spot, and I managed to grab hold of you a couple of days before and ask how I could make sure that you were calling me across the line and saying those magic words, and you said, well, send me an email, Simon, and I'll do my best. And all I could think of all day, I wasn't at all bothered about the time. And, you know, I have this thing about it's the time you have rather than the time you did, which marks a race. And I can remember every single minute of that day, but I can remember massively coming down the line. I checked behind me and there was a guy with a flag and he didn't want to be in my photograph. And there was somebody in front. And I thought, do you know what? Actually, I'm coming in just under 13 hours here. There's something about that because I'm the only one on this red carpet. And there you were then calling me out and saying those words. And it's the thing I remember most about that day. So I can absolutely understand why all of those people don't want to miss that and why you don't want to miss saying it to them, because you're spot on when you say it's is something that makes people happy in that moment of pain that they've had throughout the day when they cross the finish line. It gives them an extra bit of strength, for sure.
And it's interesting because of some of the stories people have told me, and I'm putting it all in a book form now of some incredible stories of people getting to that finish line and how after that long of a day, after that arduous training that months on months, some people for years to get to the Ironman finish line, whether it's Kona or anywhere, they want to be recognized and they need to be recognized and they've got to have some point. It's the point of the race that they think about the most. So when it doesn't happen, if I'm not there or somebody else calls them or I'm in the bathroom or whatever it may be, I hear about it. I get the messages constantly and I don't ignore them. I say, give me your phone number. And I call people every week. The numbers are not even something I would want to discuss. People wouldn't believe it. So it's something that once I get them on the phone, it's a great conversation because even grown men are crying over the phone. And then I throw it at them one-on-one because they missed it or because it wasn't said. It's like they become healed. It's such a tough physical event, yet it heals people. It heals people from a loss of a loved one or heals them from a loss of a child or heals them because they were addicted to something all their lives. And now they're clean, they're sober. And it's a healing process. I've seen it over and over and over again. It's not just an event. It's not just a race. It's a pretty big cosmic vision of life. And when I talk to people who are not part of Ironman or part of triathlon or part of endurance, they look at me with this look like, are you kidding me? I go, no. And I'm not preaching it. I know it because I've seen it. I've felt it. I've heard it. And as you have and others have, and it works, even though it's the toughest single day endurance event on the planet, it seems to heal. Isn't that weird?
Yeah. Well, that's an amazing story that you ring people up as well, Mike, if you miss them, crossing the finish line. That's awesome. Probably the reason why everybody loves you so much, because you're just going that one step further than most people are prepared to take. But you know, you talked about the standout stories there, and I don't want to preempt anything that's going to come in your book, but are you able to share any of those, just one or two of those with us quickly?
Sure. I've had stories with people that have come up to me prior or written to me prior about what they've been going through, and then stories that I've heard about afterwards. And yeah, there's just a lot of stuff that, you know, one being the little girl I met in Lake Placid in 2012, her name was Grace McDonald, and just this vibrant little 7-year-old. And I met her with her older brother, Jack, because mom said she's heard me call her dad an Ironman prior. And my gosh, she was just much older than her age and just a cutie. And then on race day, you know, her dad didn't finish that day after 9 in a row. And I know she was probably disappointed, but then she lost her life at a terrible school shooting here in the U.S. In December of that year. And you know, her mom and dad have moved forward, and dad did Kona a year later and in honor of her. And you know, I get to meet a lot of people and they touch me personally. And I just, you know, it's a family, and I've always been felt honored to be a part of other people's families because they feel we have such a strong connection because they know I'll be there for them. You know, it's not like I'm the dad being there for the son, but I'm there for a lot of people at a time they need someone to be there for them. And remember, there's a lot of people that come to Ironman races and they're completely on their own. And I'm like the only thing, oh, Mike, you got to call me. I've been working hard. None of my family could make it here. I'm thinking, wow, this is, so I'm their family member because I'm the closest thing they have to the family, and they know I'm going to talk about them and reward them. So yeah, there's a lot of stories like that. You know, the mother that came to me after a race because I knew her daughter had passed away from a drug overdose, and I asked her after the race, I said, how you doing? She goes, you know, I'm healing. I'm getting there. Thanks, Mike. Thanks for calling me in. And just simple things like that. So there's so many stories of people even getting to a start line. That's usually the win. The win is getting to a start line of an Ironman. Think about that. Or people telling me how they were bawling like babies scared as hell when they were just signing up for an Ironman. I mean, can you imagine that? You're signing up a year in advance, and the trepidation is just so immense. You're crying on filling out the registry. So
wow.
It's a lot of stories like that.
That's a privileged and awesome position you have there, Mike, in that community. And so it brings me on to another question I had, actually, because this is something I've experienced as a coach, being at the finish line, watching people cross the line who may have been in that position you just described, but, you know, hands shaking while they were filling the entry form in and being unable to press the submit button on the computer because the hand was so sweaty.
Yeah.
But
I know,
you know, and I've stood at the finish line, watched those people with a lump in my throat and sometimes tears rolling down my cheeks, and it's happened to me occasionally when I've been commentating. Has that ever happened to you at all? Some of those stories you mentioned when you see people come across the line, is there a moment when, I wouldn't say it's losing your professionalism, but you just have to take a big breath in before you call?
Yeah, there's a lot of moments like that. And I'm able to keep it together. It's usually when I don't is when I'm down in the finish chute, maybe the last hour, hour and a half, and I see somebody coming in who... I know the story, or I know them, and they start seeing the look on their eyes when they're coming in. It's usually the look and the emotion that's thrown your way that affects you. And when I see it eye to eye, heart to heart, that's when it gets to me. I know I've lost a couple times, and you know the professional side of me comes right back because I've got another story coming in. I've got someone else who's deserves what we can give them at the finish line. So I kind of pop back into that mode. I mean, when I saw Sarah Reinerson get off her bike and miss the bike cutoff in Kona and balls down crying, it was behind me where the bike dismount was when that happened to her in Kona. Mm-hmm. And I knew Sarah from San Diego, we're close. And I saw her just bawling like a baby because she didn't. And I started losing in the tower, and my assistant is Mike, somebody's coming. And I go, all right, you take a deep breath and you got to turn around and you're back up on top of your game so they can be rewarded when they come in. So it's an emotional second by second roller coaster, when that's happening. But yeah, it's the emotions are, man, they're high, they're low, they're all over the place on race day.
Well, you must be exhausted then when you get to the end of that day, you know, calling those last ones across, and then the big family prayer that you have at the finish line afterwards, and then it's, you know, it's back into the hotel, I guess. Or do you have to go to the bar around the corner for a drink?
Yeah, you know, Kona, we always go up for a couple libations or so, and it's always funny after an Ironman race. I mean, one beer, I feel like, are you kidding me? I just had a six pack. You know, I mean, think about it. So you're And you reminisce about the day because you're still up, you're still high.
Mm, yeah.
I mean, very seldom do I just run back to the hotel room from any Ironman. I stand around and talk to people or the final finishers and just kind of let it flow out. And then you go back and wake up the next day and do the award ceremony. And then it's the biggest reflection is when I'm on the plane on the way home. I try to write down what happened, the thoughts, what I felt, what you take away. Because think about it, I'd be an idiot if I didn't take away something that would help my life in a positive nature from what I just experienced and saw. So you try to write down tidbits, and you know, when you see the adversity people go through, and you know, it introduces a person to themselves. And sometimes you got to go through big adversities to find out who the hell you are. And I mean, it's done that for me, just seeing what I've seen.
So I don't think I needed to ask you the next question I had, which was who inspires you, because I think you've probably explained that quite well already. But you talk about sitting on the plane there and reflecting. Has there ever been any moment when you've seen something that's been so profound that it's almost been life-changing, or does that happen after every race for you?
I think at the moment that something may happen that's profound, it doesn't hit me that way right away, because I'm, you know, there's finisher after finisher. It's when I look back and go, you know, in 2005 when John Blaze finished, and I asked him before the race, you can get to the finish line. He goes, Mike, if I got to roll across, I'll get across that damn line. you know, he was battling ALS. And after he finished, I go, you did it. And he recalled our conversation, stepped back and rolled across the line. Just as kind of a joke. Well, now that roll is synonymous with a lot of finishers who are, have somebody battling ALS in their life or know of someone. And just that simple. So you look back and go, what a monumental moment. But at the time, it's a moment. You're living in that moment in time. It's when I reflect back and go, wow, so-and-so just went through hell and came through that finish line. And part of me a lot of times as the fan that I am go, how did they do that? I guess anything is possible, you know, in terms of a day. Anything's possible. I've seen it. Don't tell me it's not.
If you started in 1989, you'd have been there when Paula had her meltdown, just as she turned onto Lee Drive. Is that right? That was after then, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And then you'd have been there for the Sian Welsh and Wendy Ingram crawl to the finish line as well.
Yeah, it's funny. I saw the video because didn't we went over that in Kona last year. So I saw the video and listened. I was standing right there. Why I went down there, I don't know, but I was standing right there, maybe because it was just so insane. And I must have said, Simon, the word unbelievable 7 times in a row, because I was like, this is unbelievable. This is unbelievable. And they just kept crawling. I go, I don't know what else. This is unbelievable. Come on, guys. Keep going. And, you know, Greg Welch is standing there. And I forget, John Duke, people are all around me. And we couldn't do anything. We're just waiting for them to get to us. And they were only 10 yards away, and it seemed like 10 miles. Yeah. And I said the word unbelievable like 7 times. Like, oh, that was great announcing, Mike. Just repeat yourself.
It doesn't seem to have affected your career at all anyway. So,
well, thank you.
you were probably just uttering what everybody, I mean, that's the point about being a good commentator is you're expressing your words where everybody else that's either there live or watching on the telly is probably thinking at that moment, they're probably uttering themselves. This is unbelievable. He's right. It's unbelievable.
It's funny. I look at commentating and announcing in a little different way. When I'm calling someone or talking about someone or talking about a pro or about a finisher coming in, I feel like I'm having a one-on-one conversation with them. I want to just have this conversation with them. Like, you know what? You're amazing. You're an Ironman. You just finished this race for the first time in your life. And they look at you like, yeah, Mike, I did. And that's what I'm doing. I'm just having this conversation with them because it's about the athletes. It's about each and every one of them. So I never looked at it like, oh, you know, you got to spill out this sentence after this sentence and say this and say this. I just want it to be as natural as it can be. And because it's easier for me to portray a message if it's natural. If I had a written script in front of me and they said, you got to say this all day long, I'd have been out of the business. It's not me. I don't, you know, get somebody else to read it. That's not who I am.
So, look, Mike, you've got this great phrase, and I've heard the story about how you came up with it. You are an Iron Man, but a lot of people probably haven't. So can you explain to our listeners how you came up with the one phrase that everybody wants to hear now when they cross the finish line of an Iron Man event?
Well, in 1989 and 1990, I'd never said that phrase. In 91, I was working with another announcer for the first time. And 2 days before the race, I saw a buddy on the street in San Diego, and he had done the race before, and he was a stud. I'd run with him around Mission Bay in San Diego. I said, hey, how you doing? He goes, I'm all right. And I could tell right away there was just something off about his attitude. He was looking down at the ground. I go, what's wrong? He goes, I don't know. I didn't do that well last year. I don't think I'm going to do that well this year. And like, are you kidding me? You're a stud. You're in shape. Everything's good. And he goes, I don't know. And it was just unlike him to be negative. And he goes, I hope I get it done. And so he kind of turned to walk away. And I said, Dan, don't worry. You're going to be an Ironman on Saturday. You're going to be an Ironman. He goes, yeah, all right. And he kind of waved and walked away. And that was it. And then the race comes along. And I don't remember seeing him come out of the water as I stand there. And during the day, I go, God, I wonder how Dan's doing. I wonder how he's doing. And I just thought about him once or twice. And I knew he'd finish. He always finishes. So here he comes on a Lee Drive, and I see him. And the other announcer was on the microphone. I go, let me take this one. Yeah, so he did, obviously. And I start bringing him in. And at the end, the conversation came to mind, my conversation with him. And I said, he's going to be an Iron Man. Dan, you are an Iron Man. In other words, I was saying to him, dude, I told you so. You are an Iron Man. And he pointed up to me and, you know, just two friends having a conversation, as I said earlier. And he came in and he, you know, pointed up to the tower. But the crowd, the roar was like, wow. They just went, I go, whoa, maybe, yeah, everybody is an Iron Man. And the next one coming in, and next I started doing it. And the other announcer said, no, I don't want to do that. And I'm thinking, well, heck, I do, because they are. They deserve that. And the crowd reacted to it in a very positive way. And then they started repeating it after me, you know, yelling it out. I go, this is cool. And it was just a thing that happened because I told a friend that, don't worry, you're going to be an Iron Man. You're going to finish. In other words, I could have just said, you're going to finish. And I may never said that phrase. But I said, you're going to be an Iron Man, which he was and is. And that's how it came about. It was as simple as that. It isn't amazing. A guy like me, I built my career out of 4-word vocabulary. I was no dummy. I figured I could 4-word vocabulary can build a nice little career. So it has.
I mean, obviously, you know, other commentators have copied that and used it now. And I guess that even in races that are not MDOT branded, people are using that phrase to describe the people crossing the line of their own race. Do you feel cheated at all that people are copying that? I did see somewhere that you'd said that it was your phrase, not mine. But it doesn't bother you that people use that?
Not a bit. It's the athletes. Are you kidding me? And I've had other announcers, Mike, I don't know. I go, you say it. If you feel it's right for you, because I know it's right for the athlete. I absolutely will attest to that 100%. It's right for the athlete. At least that's what I believe. You say, oh, okay, thank you. I go, it's theirs. It's not mine. Sure, I coined it, said it. Yeah, again, but it's for everyone. It's to be shared. It's to be honored that they are an Iron Man. And no matter what voice is on that microphone or what race, I can't be everywhere. I want them to hear it. And, you know, a lot of times it's not said, and I'll get called from, a lot of the calls come from races I'm not at. You know, they never said it to me, Mike. Okay, let me say it to you. You know, because they deserve it. Not because Mike Riley wants to say it to them because he created it. It's because they deserve it. And so I want every other announcer, I want you to say it to them. Because if you do and you see their reaction, you go, well, I'm going to keep doing it. It's for the athlete. They deserve it. My goodness, they deserve it.
So you said at the beginning that you didn't know whether you should say it for every athlete. And I guess maybe you thought that we should ration it out. If we say this to everyone, it'll sort of demean the words a little bit. But now it seems like just about everyone that comes across the line, as you say, wants to hear those 4 words.
I think it demeans the words if you don't say it.
Okay.
I think it's not the repetitive nature of it. It's funny. I tell a lot of crowds, I go, how many first-time Iron spectators here? I've always called them Iron spectators. And people raise, I go, you know, you're going to hear a lot of repetitive things at the finish line here that me and other announcers are going to say. And it's the nature of what we do. But you need to know something. That person finishing and coming down that chute is hearing it for the very first time. And that's what matters. So, I kind of say it to the crowd because new people there go, God, that guy says that all the time. Well, and after they hear that, they shake their head. You can see in unison, yeah, yeah. And when people come in, the crowd wants to hear it over and over again because they love looking at the reaction of the people that hear it, you know, that coming through.
I get it. It's amazing how many
finishers come in now and they cup their hand to their ear when they're coming on in, because, you know, don't worry, you're going to hear it.
I guess every competitor across the line, it's just like a Men in Black moment, isn't it, where each person crossing the line, it raises what's gone on, and then you have to start again with the next one.
It's like every finisher is like Groundhog Day. It just keeps coming at you.
So have you ever been on the other end of that, Mike? Have you ever crossed that line and heard those words uttered to you?
I have not. 1989 is when I was planning on doing Kona and training in San Diego with everybody, you know, the whole deal. And That's when they had called me and asked me to come to announce. And I actually said, I'm doing the race. Maybe I could do it the next year. No, we really want you to come this year. And, you know, you can always do it next year. And then they put this package together. I go, what? You're going to what for me to? I said, all right, well, the rest is history. I've been on the microphone ever since. That gives me as much pleasure as I think finishing one will. And one day will I? I don't know. Maybe not. So we'll see.
And okay, so I did ask you at the beginning if there's anything you didn't want me to ask you, but I'll see if I can put you on the spot here. If somebody was going to call you across the line then and utter those words, who would you like it to be?
Oh, that's easy. That's from the person that I made my greatest call ever to. I've made, you know, but people would always ask, what's been your greatest Ironman call? And up to 2013, it was a lot. Well, in 2013, my son came to Ironman Arizona as an Ironman. And he was 3 years old when I started this game. And so to bring him in was absolutely, I mean, with you know, my wife, his mom standing there, his older sister. And so my son, Andy, would be the one to call me in.
And he's done
a bit of announcing over the years.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, he has. He's got his own. He's got a big endurance business now, and it's just not something that he wants to pursue. And he's only 32 years old. You know, if he wants to pick it up later, he probably could. But he's just trying to build a business, so it's tough to leave every weekend to do that. But, yeah, my son would be the one to call me. And if my daughter wanted to do it in unison with him, that'd even be unbelievable. So it'd be family for sure.
So you talked about that being a great moment of yours. I mean, you've witnessed a lot of things in Kona. What have been some of the greatest moments that you can think of? Obviously, the Mark and Dave show in 1989.
Yeah, the Mark and Dave show. Greg Welch being the first non-American to win Kona. We all just kind of knew. I go, wow, he just opened the door up for the world, which it did. So that was a great moment. I mean, the other great moments were... Paula, you know, the first woman to go under 9 hours in Kona, and she finished like 12th overall. I mean, I go, this is, you see in performances, there's just absolutely mind boggling. I thought about him the other day, Jim Holly, the first person to finish Ironman with AIDS. And this was back when there was just not much known about the disease, and doctors told him if he did the race, he'd die. And yet he's still living. So, I mean, there's so many stories like that, bringing in people from who have mastered other sports, who have been at the top of their game, you know, whether it was Hines Ward, MVP in the Super Bowl, whether it was gold medalists, and they all want to, or a famous chef, Gordon, you know, Gordon Ramsay, they all come to Kona, and they just become these, I call them, you know, we're all like little boys and girls just playing on the playground for 140 miles, and they all become these humans that are really them. Nothing we see on television, it's them. It's them broken down to their simplest form. And when I bring those types of people across and call them an Iron Man, you know, people have told me it's better than their Super Bowl. And I'm, wow, are you kidding me? But it just, you know, it's memory after memory like that. It's a never-ending story.
It's an interesting.
It's taken me forever to write the book.
It's an interesting one, the Gordon Ramsay story. I know Gordon through a guy that I coach, and so we met a couple of times in Kona and chatted. But he got a lot of bad publicity in the UK because people felt he shouldn't have got that spot. And I know that he was one of the ambassadors two or three times, and there were lots of ambassadors. And you know, there was a lot of mainstream press about Gordon getting ready for that race, and he absolutely loved it. But it was sad that people sort of, you know, felt that they needed to troll him about it, really. Did you get much of that sense of that in the US?
Yeah, I've gotten sense of that with other athletes who were given spots like that. I don't get into that political end and nature of people doing that or being upset. I don't mind. I like it because it accentuates our sport to people who may become triathletes, who may become swim, bike, and run people, who may, you know, be a part of our sport. We need our sport to grow. I mean, we just can't say, you know, we keep talking about 89 and we keep talking about a lot of great memories, but our best memories better be ahead of us. And so I want people to go, oh my God, whether it's a Gordon or seeing, you know, Jan Frodeno race or seeing, you know, Daniela or, and being inspired by them or the woman that, you know, battled breast cancer and survived and is finishing. They're all great stories, whether, and some are more public than others because they're public people. But if it's going to accentuate our sport, Simon, and bring more people into it, I say the more power to it. Bring it on. Keep it coming.
Do you remember Chrissy's first year? I mean, Chrissy was one of the, you know, I've had the...
2007.
Yeah, I've had the fortune to come to Kona to work and be with athletes for the last sort of 19 or 20 years. Not quite the streak that Kenny Clark's got or you've got, but still, I've seen a lot of those memories you talked about. And I remember meeting Chrissy in the UK early on in that year. And I think she just won Ironman Career and then she'd been to Wimbledon and had a bad race. And Don Ryder was one of the commentary team that year. And I saw him in a bar just beforehand. And I said, you know what? I think Chrissy might go under the radar here and surprise a few people. And he said, well, no, I think, was it McKaylee Jones and Kate Major may have been the ones that
were watching
that year. And the helicopter and the motorbike weren't even following Chrissy when she went up Palani on after 10 miles on the run. What do you remember that year and her coming under the radar and being surprised by it?
Yeah. I think she had won... Did she win
I think
Whit Raymond was there and Whit was telling me, he goes, Mike, it was a brutal day and this girl just ripped through the course. I go, really? Who is she? She's a British girl. And I go, British girl ripping through a hot day? That, you know, you just go, that's not their type of weather they train in. And then I'm thinking, well, maybe she trained someplace else. And so she was on the radar, but wasn't on the top three radar. Until I started getting her splits, I go, this girl's flying. I mean, absolutely flying. And so when she won, it was great bringing her in as a, you know, kind of a debut Kona person, because that's always very cool. And I wish I'd have had more to be able to talk about her, but her resume wasn't that long. But remember, I get to be right there, put my arm around him, do an interview. She was truly overwhelmed. I think she had the confidence to win, but when somebody does, they go like, you see that holy crap moment on their face. Like this happened. And she was shaken and the genuine, humbleness that she showed and talking to the crowd after who knows what I asked her. And I go, God, this is cool. Hopefully she's around for a while. Cause you never can say, well, she'll win two or three after you win one. You just can't, you can't predict that. But, yeah, it was, she's something else, man. Her time, the year she got a flat and had to fix the flat tire and then worked her way back up through the, I remember Belinda Granger said it. She went by her flat and, oh good, Chrissy's got a flat, you know, maybe give us, and she turned around and Chrissy comes flying by her. She goes, how did that happen?
Yeah.
She thought, you know, Belinda thought she was riding well, but it was just, Chrissy was a rocket. She was an absolute rocket.
Well, I remember that first year after she'd chatted with you and she'd gone into the hotel and she was getting ready for the press conference, she just didn't know what to do with herself. There was myself there. There was a guy called Asker Jekendrup who she knew from Birmingham University. Mm-hmm. There was another British pro probably pulled out that day, Scott Niedley and myself. And we were like, come on, Chrissy, have a drink now. Okay, sit down. And people were coming up to her and saying, hey, do you want a bike sponsorship for next year? All these people offering a sponsorship deal, trying to get her. Well, she just didn't know what to do with herself. Then she got on the phone to Brett Sutton and she's chatting with him. And she's saying, yeah, boss, yeah, I just wanted to let you know how my race had gone, boss. Yeah, I've won. Anyway, I've won. And it was this surreal conversation between her and Brett, wherever he was. You know, it's just like you say. She was just overwhelmed with it all. Really,
yeah,
fantastic. It was great story.
It was cool.
So you get to call across. We talked about the winners. We talked about the age groupers with the great stories. But then there are these guys that come across after 16 hours. You know, trying to make the call before midnight. And you know, particularly the older guys, the Lou Hollanders and the Bill Black, Bill Bells, and the Sister Madonna Buddhas, and. I want to know, Mike, you've called all these guys across, the oldest finishers, male and female. Are we going to get to see you calling them across when you're in your 70s and 80s?
No. No. I'm not going to be on the microphone at my 70s. You know, I you got to remember, it's, I wish I could do it the rest of my life, but I have a life. And, you know, I've got a couple of grandchildren now, two boys that I spend a lot of time with here in San Diego. And remember, it's been a lot of years of traveling and being away from home and, you know, my wife raising the kids when I'm gone. And, you know, I need to someday go, I need to cut it down a little. Now, will I ever stop? Maybe if I only do one or two races a year just to keep it. But the next 2 years are still packed schedule. I know that for sure. But into my 70s, 80s, some buddies, we were out riding, about 6 months ago. Riley, how long are you going to do this? You know, they're all friends. How long are you, mate? How are you going to do it? I can see you. You'll be in a wheelchair with an oxygen tank on the back of the chair, one of those hoses in your nose, and you'll be yelling people to come be an Ironman. I go, no, that will not happen. I'm not going to be doing that. So who knows? But I did have a 9-year-old boy come to me in Lake Placid and said, Mr. Riley, my mom's doing the Ironman. I love the race, da-da-da, and I want to do it when I'm 18. I go, well, that's 9 years from now. I don't think I'll be the one to call you an Ironman. And I said it kind of jokingly. You should have seen the look on his face.
No.
It's like I crushed his friggin' I go, no, I didn't realize it. I could have said it to an adult. They would have laughed. But the 9-year-old looked at me, Mike, like, well, you just crushed my word. Well, I'm thinking 9 years from now, I don't know. Anyway.
Did you have to do one of those special phone calls afterwards to the young boy?
No, I just gave him a hug. And I go, I can't wait to call you an Ironman. And good. Yeah.
Well, if you can remember, there was a famous moment in a British Olympic history when Stephen Redgrave crossed the finish line at the Olympics, and I think he probably won his fourth gold medal. And then they asked him if he was retiring, and he said, if anyone sees me in a boat, you know, before the next Olympics, they've got my permission to shoot me. And of course, then he went to the next Olympics and won a gold medal, and people continuously remind him of that little clip.
Yeah. I never say never or never say end. I just, you know how I live? I live one event at a time. I got Ironman Wisconsin on September 9th, and that's what I'm looking forward to.
Well, you talked about being out there all day. It's 20 hours, I guess, but by the time you've got to bed, it's probably a full day you've been up. And the schedule you keep is as grueling as an athlete that goes around the world competing in these events. I mean, how do you keep fit for all of this, Mike? Because you couldn't do this if you weren't in shape.
Yeah, I mean, I ride a lot. I'm yoga all the time. Because you remember, the tough thing about race week, I don't get to work out a lot, go for a run or two. But on race day, I'm moving, but I'm just kind of standing around. So I try to stretch. So that's why I do a lot of yoga, stay in shape and keep the core. You know, my diaphragm is everything on the speaking, because if you breathe through that, I don't lose my voice. If I work with the core, I mean, it's just the things I do to. And so, yeah, you gotta stay in shape. I mean, you gotta eat well and stay hydrated. It's funny, on race day, I stay on the edge of dehydration, because the more I drink, the more I'm going to the bathroom. I don't want to go to the bathroom. So I go, all right, I'll just take a little sip of water here. Because if I drank a whole bottle of Gatorade or water, I know it would happen, you know, half hour later. So I just kind of sip it through the day, and it keeps me from having to go to the bathroom too much.
You can maybe get an Ironman.
Tricks to this, right?
You can maybe get an Ironman sponsored catheter that you can use so you can drink a bit more.
Yeah. I don't think that's going to happen.
All right, Mike. So I guess that people are always asking you for your picks. You know, who's going to win this race? Who's going to win that race? Do you have a standard response to that, or do you usually sort of satisfy their urge and give them some of your selections?
No, I don't. I don't do picks. I don't do selections or picks. And there's reasons for that. The biggest reason is because I'm about that athlete on race day. If they're having a great performance, I'm the one that gets to tell the crowd they're having a great performance. If I have in my head that I thought the winner was going to be the guy or girl who's in third place, you know, I don't want it to dissuade or take away from the one that's leading. So my picks are the race day. You know, I don't predict their pick. I take care of the ones that are leading, coming in second, coming in third, bringing them across. So I just never have. I've never put down like, oh, I think this is 1, 2, 3 and 1, 2, 3. I don't go there, because I think it would, I don't know, mess up my race day call. And I don't want that to happen.
No, of course not. I love that. It's one of the things that, you know, I do a lot of tutoring for coaches in the UK for British Triathlon, and one of the things we talk about that coaches should do is have what they call an athlete-centered program. So it's all about the athlete, and I like the way that you have an athlete-centered commentary mindset as well, because that's brilliant. It really is. And you know, come race day, obviously you're going to have 1,500, nearly 2,000 of those athlete-centered commentaries, aren't you, in your head in that 17 hours?
Yeah. When I was just the speech I had to give at the USAT Hall of Fame a couple of weeks ago, I you know, here I have got to write a speech. I'm not, you know, I've written a lot of speeches, but when you write a speech, you want to cover everything. And I just told everybody my three goals for race day are simple. One, take care of the athlete. It's about the athlete. If we take care of them, they'll take care of us and our sport. Second, take care of the event. The event is the reason we're all there. It's our foundation and our platform to be able to see dreams come through. And three, take care of the event director and his sponsors. I mean, we're the voice of that event director. We're the eyes and ears. We're the one that, you know, want to make sure his work and her work is going to be rewarded. So it's three simple: athletes, the event, and the event director. And I think if we take care of those three on race day, things are going to be just fine.
Oh, that's fantastic. Fantastic. I love that, Mike. You've provided me with a lot of thoughts, and you talked about reflecting there. It's something we do as coaches, and I'll be sitting reflecting on our conversation today and wondering how I can improve my own commentary going forward.
I got to hand it to Simon on the coaching side. I would find that so difficult because you get ingrained into that person and that personality, and you want so bad to see him succeed, and whether it's a time goal or whether it's just a finishing goal. And you got to be in it heart and soul with him. Sometimes I ask coaches, so how many people here are you having in the race? I got like, you know, 14 in the race. And I'm, oh my gosh, how do you do that? That'd be like having 14 sons or daughters, and you're just going nuts. You want them to be successful. I don't know how you do it. So my hat's off to you.
Well, and like asking a father which is his favorite child, it's the same thing if you ask a coach who's his favorite athlete. You know, you just can't do that. Everyone's a favorite, and like you've got to be athlete centered and be in the moment with each person and cheer each of them and celebrate the victories and try to commiserate with them when things don't go quite as well. And you know, I picked up on what you said earlier about sometimes the greatest victory for an athlete is just getting to the start line, you know, reminding them that this is just one day. And there have been probably, you know, for some people, they might have been trying to get to somewhere like Kona or, you know, the 70.3 World Championships for 20 years. So this is one day out of 20 years. And it's often about the journey. I know we talk about this a lot and you talk about it a lot. It's about the journey you had to get there, not just the day itself. People you met on the way, the experiences and everything else that goes into making it such a memorable time.
Yeah, and then there's that finish line where that one thing that said, I've always said it, you know, when you receive a diploma in anything, wow, you spent 4 years at university or you got a doctorate or, you know, whatever it may be, that diploma is like, even though it's only a piece of paper, it's saying I succeeded. And so I get to throw an audio diploma at everybody and they take it away like it's their piece of paper, like it's and just on the audio side. So it's you know, it's an honor, but it's amazing that it has gravitated and taken so many people by storm. It's changed their lives.
It certainly has, Mike. Well, listen, I've taken up enough of your time. Really grateful for the fact that you've been able to share some of that time. I know you've just come back from Mont-Tremblant, so you must be wanting to have a little nap or get off to yoga. Thank you so much for sharing those insights. It's been fabulous. I'm absolutely 100% confident that all of our listeners will have heard another side to you that they perhaps hadn't realised, understood what's behind the whole ethos of commentating, certainly from your point of view, and what makes it so special for everybody when they hear those magical words. And I'm not going to ask you to say them because I understand why you reserve those for the finish line. But for those of you who haven't been to an MDOT event, I can't possibly describe what it's like to hear the words, "You are an Ironman." Mike shouted them to me last year when I came across the finish line in Kona. You can probably detect that there's a little bit of emotion in my voice when I recall that moment now. And it means a lot. And Mike has been truly genuine when he talks about how this thing is life-changing. It was for me. It marked an end of a 30-year journey for me. And I know that some of the other journeys that people have are more monumental and memorable than mine are. But Mike, on behalf of everybody that's crossed the finish line and heard you shout those words, I'd like to say thank you. For those of you who've not experienced it yet, I hope you do get to hear it sometime and hear it from the man himself. So from me, Mike, from all of our listeners, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you today.
Thank you, Simon. Thank you for having me on. I certainly appreciate it. It's been great chatting. And much aloha to you for what you do. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. If you just stay on the line for one sec. Listeners, thank you very much for being with us yet again. I truly appreciate you being here every week. I know that there are plenty of podcasts you could choose to listen to, but you choose to come back to ours. So I hope you've enjoyed today's conversation. We'll be back next week with another awesome guest. But for now, enjoy the rest of your week and take care. That wraps up this week's episode. I'd just like to say thank you for taking the time to listen to the conversation today, and I hope you learned at least one thing that you can put into practice in your training. Now, if this was your first time listening, please go back and listen to our previous episodes. I can guarantee that they will be just as good as you heard from today's guest. If you've listened to all the episodes so far, then thank you so much for continuing this learning journey with me. As you might be aware, reviews and ratings are the currency of podcasts, so I would really appreciate it if you could leave a review and a rating on iTunes or Podbean. You could also follow me at the same time. I also have a free gift for you. In 30 years of competing in triathlon, 20 years of coaching, I've learned an awful lot from my own experiences and from some of the guests who have and will appear on this show. And I feel it's my duty, as I approach the latter stage of my coaching career, to share these with you. So I've put together 25 of my best training, racing and lifestyle strategies, and I've squeezed them down into just 2 pages of content. And in order to get hold of this, all you need to do is email triathlonsuccess to beth@thetriathloncoach.com and she will send it right back out to you. You could also think about joining my Facebook community. It's called the Triathlon Coach Cafe. We've got over 2,300 members just like you, eager to find out more about how to improve their training and share their successes with people. It's free to join, but you will have to ask. So go along there, answer the questions, and then we'll even do a little video each week to answer your questions. Finally, if you want to make sure you don't miss future episodes, please subscribe using Podbean or iTunes. We release new episodes every Wednesday. So that's all for now. See you again next week, same time, same place.